Cause that's the bottom line.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, February 14th, Valentine's Day edition of the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. On today's show, Kentucky looks for revenge against Tennessee tonight here in Lexington. ABC, always be croutin'. But at what point does it get just way too ridiculous? Louisville, quietly, is now a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. West Virginia proves to us, yet again, why they cannot be trusted in the NCAA tournament. While Kansas tells the Big 12 yet again, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. James Dolan and Charles Oakley have a secret meeting to iron out their differences. The Reds have a new pitcher who looks exactly like one of their old pitchers they used to have. And we pick another college basketball game tonight after winning again last night in taking DePaul and the points over Villanova. And now a documented 14-4 for the month of February. So let's go.
You are listening live.
Kentucky and Tennessee, live from Rupp Arena tonight. Of course, everyone here remembers Kentucky traveling to Knoxville on January 24th and losing that game 82-80. Since that game, Kentucky is 3-2 with losses to Kansas and Florida and two nondescript wins at home against Georgia and LSU, followed up by easily their best win since the Tennessee loss against Alabama over the weekend. Tennessee also 3-2. Since they defeated Kentucky. They have defeated Kansas State, Auburn, and Mississippi, but they lost to Georgia and Mississippi State. And that Georgia game was a one-point loss in Knoxville over the weekend. So in other words, we still have no idea what to expect from this Tennessee team. Joe Lenardi's latest bracketology has Tennessee as the very first team out of the tournament. So in other words, they're number 69 right now. Rob Gronkowski would be very happy. You look ahead for Tennessee, of their remaining six games, their three home games include Missouri, Vanderbilt, and Alabama, all extremely winnable games. Their three road games include tonight at Kentucky, South Carolina, and LSU. So if you go by the numbers, you would think that this is probably a 4-2 team the rest of the conference season, which would put them 18-13, 10-8 in the SEC, right smack dab on the bubble for the NCAA tournament. And of course, the last time Kentucky and Tennessee played, Tennessee's Grant Williams was the best player on the court without a doubt. And in fact, he's just coming off a game in which he had 30 points against Georgia over the weekend. And also the last time these two teams met, Wenyen Gabriel was terrible for Kentucky, going 1-6 from the field and 0-2 free throws. But what does all this stuff mean? Right now, Kentucky's sitting as a 14-point favorite in this game, and that's exactly where it opened, so it really hasn't moved a whole lot. As of this taping, Tennessee has 57% of the public money out in Vegas, so that's not something you could hang your hat on, that the money is definitely going in one direction. In the last 10 games out in Las Vegas, Kentucky has covered twice out of those 10 games. Yet for the season, Kentucky still sits at 13-12 against the spread. So if you had bet $1 on Kentucky every game this year to cover the spread, you'd be down 20 cents right now. But Kentucky got off to a very fast start, and if you had done that the last 10 games, you'd be 2-8 right now. And that's why we always talk about, look for the teams that are really good against the spread and go against them. And look for the teams that have been really bad against the spread and go with them. Because these point spreads always even out. Tennessee's been very good on the road this year. In their last 11 road games, they're 8-3 against the spread. So Tennessee is not afraid to go on the road and take on the big boys and play them well. In that game on January 24th, Tennessee scored 82 points. And in the five games since, Tennessee's only scored more than 75 points once since then. So that is a sign of how badly Kentucky played defense that night in allowing Tennessee to score so many points. So what will we have tonight? John Calipari came out yesterday saying, I looked back at the tapes against Alabama. We don't play situational basketball very well. Well, you don't play defense very well either. People could say, oh, the defense is cured. Have you seen Alabama's stats offensively? They're horrible. So holding Alabama to 58 points is no great shakes. We'll find out more tonight against an offensive-oriented team like Tennessee. So what happens? Is the reboot completely done now? Is it time to start thinking of Kentucky as a Final Four team again? I wouldn't go that far just yet. But I'll say this. Unless this game goes to overtime, which we don't see, Tennessee's not putting up 82 points again tonight on Kentucky. We'll call it 85-73. Kentucky wins, but Tennessee covers and gets the money. But this is not a game we will use as one of our Mac Daddy Stogie picks out of Las Vegas. Just sit back and watch this one and hope you don't lose your butt. Because there's no way you can lay Kentucky in 14 points right now against anybody. Much less a team they actually lost to 3 weeks ago. So we'll call it 85-73 Kentucky. But if you want to put a couple of jelly beans on this game, do it at your own risk. We endorse nothing on this game tonight.
Later, he gets the rebound, passes it to the man, shoots it, and boom goes the dynamite.
A, B, C. Always be recruiting. That's what John Calipari does in Kentucky. He's always recruiting these kids. But at what point does it get just way too ridiculous to start talking about recruiting? There's an article in the Herald Leader today, and the headline reads, Calipari already keeping an eye on top recruits in the class of 2019. And right below the headline, you have this list of all these players that are among that class, and they're all people you've never heard of. They're all people you couldn't pick out of a lineup. And most importantly, they're all kids. These kids can't even drive right now. They're sophomores in high school. They haven't even completed their sophomore year in high school. They can't even drive a car legally right now. And there are pictures on the website, and there's headlines about them, and these are kids. And I know, once they get to college and they're 18, we treat them like adults because, well, we put a lot of pressure on them, we gamble on them or against them, what have you. But that's what once they get to college. I was on a radio show in this town one time, and I swear to God, Kentucky had just gotten a 4-star recruit from Tampa, Florida, who hadn't even started his sophomore year in high school yet. Had not started. He still had 3 years of high school football to go. Now, I don't remember this kid's name, but I told the co-host with me at the time, please, for the love of God, do not lead the show with talking about this kid from Tampa who verbally committed to Kentucky, some 4-star recruit, who verbally committed to Kentucky and who would not be stepping on the campus, and I did the math in my head, he wouldn't be stepping on the campus for 39 months. Just like these kids who are in the 2019 basketball class, guess what? If they commit to you today, they're not setting foot on the Rupp Arena floor for an official basketball game for 33 months. And you expect me to pay attention to this? And you expect me to be interested in this? Don't tell me about the labor pains, just show me the baby. And I know recruiting is such a big deal around here because college basketball and college football, they're the only games in town. So you gotta have players, you gotta go out and recruit these kids. But there are people who make money off of giving information regarding these kids. And there are crazy people, and I know it's none of you because you wouldn't be listening to this show otherwise, but there are crazy people who sit around and obsess over high school recruiting. And they can tell you all these things about all these high school kids. Meanwhile, the rest of the world passes those people by. I could rant on this forever because it's so silly. And the emphasis that we place on these kids and where they'll go to school and these fans that harass them on social media. And then when they don't choose their school, they go back on social media and kill these kids and call them every name in the book. It's pathetic. You want to know why I'm not on local radio here in Lexington right now? Because I won't talk recruiting. Heck, I don't even want to talk recruiting on National Recruiting Day. And I know it's important. It's the lifeline of all these programs. But I'm sorry. I'm not going to spend time on Sports Talk Radio talking about recruiting. And I'm sorry. And if you want me to do that, I can't. That's not who I am. And that's not the show I put on. I can mention it in passing. I can mention it just as a matter of fact, but I'm not going to sit here and go in depth and have recruiting analysts on. Oh, and by the way, there's a real job, recruiting analyst. You would think that being a recruiting analyst doesn't really pay the bills until you see some of these guys and how much money they've made and the names they've made for themselves by simply speculating about where high school kids are going to go to school and the lemmings that pay attention to these recruiting analysts. Those are the people that are supporting their lifestyles. Anyway, bottom line, following recruiting is for losers. If that's you, I'm sorry. Because you can tell me all about these five-star recruits all you want until they step on the field or on the court. Look at Kentucky football. Who's the biggest two recruits that Kentucky's had in recent years? Matt Elam, Drew Barker. What did they do last year? Absolutely nothing. Oh yeah, and what about that Scalabissiere last year? Five-star recruit, lottery pick. How'd he turn out? You think they were getting recruited two and a half, three years before they showed up at UK? Absolutely.
I invented a scholarship called the Dope Walker Scholarship. I said I only give it out once a lifetime, you know, type of thing. I think we had 30 up one year, but anyway.
He would literally walk into a high school, put his business card on the board and stick a $100 bill to it and tell a kid to call him.
College basketball last night, Louisville and Syracuse. Somehow, Louisville wins in overtime at Syracuse. You want to talk about an unpredictable team. Syracuse is an unpredictable team. Syracuse, who lost to St. John's by 33 at home earlier this year, and you don't know where they're going in terms of the ACC. They just came off a five-game winning streak in the ACC, including a win over Virginia, and now they've lost two in a row, including last night's overtime loss to Louisville. Don't worry, Syracuse travels to Louisville again a week from Sunday. But the focus here is Louisville. And I know people here in Lexington, in the Big Blue Nation, they don't like Louisville, they don't like Patino. And I understand that, I get it. But what people are sleeping on is Louisville has played themselves into a number one seed of the NCAA tournament. Right now they're sitting at number four in the Jeff Sagarin ratings, they're number five in the ESPN BPI, number five by Ken Pomeroy. And if you look at these teams that are ranked ahead of Louisville, especially on Pomeroy, listen to these teams. Gonzaga, okay, I'll give you that. Virginia, that's a six-loss team. Villanova, West Virginia, still, even after last night's game, a six-loss team ranked ahead of Louisville. And then you have Kansas and Baylor, who are number one seeds right now. But in all these power rating systems, those two Big 12 teams on down the line a little bit. Maybe they're a little bit overrated. Who wins a Baylor-Louisville matchup? You think Baylor, right? And they actually did match up earlier this year, and Baylor won in one of those holiday tournaments at Thanksgiving. But what really happened to that game? Louisville was leading that game almost the entire time. And if you listen to anybody who watched that game, and I remember seeing the end of it, Louisville blew that game. What would Louisville do against Kansas, you think? I think Louisville would beat Kansas, too. But don't be shocked when that calendar turns to March, and all these projections are telling us that Louisville is a number one seed. And granted, they do play some tough teams down the stretch in the ACC, including North Carolina and Wake Forest on the road. But with how good this team is defensively, it's going to be tough to go against them in March. And we talk a lot about teams in your bracket pools that's going to flip the balance of power, determine who's going to win your money in your bracket pools. In Lexington, Louisville's going to be one of those teams.
No, oh, what a nice teardrop.
From 2 feet out.
The iron unkind.
Oh, he bounces it off his left toe.
He's a high riser. Pure.
Oh, he's dialed up like a modem.
Speaking of the Big 12 last night, Texas Tech went to Baylor. We didn't think Texas Tech could get up for the second time in 3 days against a team projected to be a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. And we were wrong. Texas Tech won that game. But the game of the night last night, obviously, Kansas and West Virginia. We really like West Virginia this year. Regular season. In the tournament, only God knows what they're going to do. They can make the championship game of the whole thing. They can lose in the first round, just like they did last year. So, of course, West Virginia, who blew out Kansas in January, they go to Kansas for the rematch. They're up by 14 points with 3 minutes to go. And even with a minute 13 to go, the number-crunching nerds at ESPN said that Kansas had less than a 0.1% chance of winning the game. So what happens? Of course, West Virginia loses the game. And with 3 minutes left, Dick Vitale. Yes, he still announces games, ladies and gentlemen. Dick Vitale gets on the Kansas fans who are leaving to go home early. Well, that sounds familiar. That's a very familiar chorus that you hear around Kentucky fans sometimes when they leave early. But of course, Kansas wins, West Virginia chokes, and there's a question today I was reading. Was it a great comeback by Kansas or a historical collapse by West Virginia? That's what, when you have a game like this, that's what everybody asks. They did it for the Super Bowl, they do it for everything. And a million times out of a million, it's due to one team collapsing. But the results of this game meant that Kansas now has a 2-game lead with 5 games left in the Big 12. So they're going to win that conference again for the 13th time in a row. Kentucky couldn't approach that. Nobody could approach that. Power 5, non-Power 5, doesn't matter. In a basketball strong conference like the Big 12, for this to happen, it's incredible. I don't understand how this is not getting more attention, but I digress. And more bad news for Kentucky fans for this game. Kansas set a new world record last night for crowd noise, breaking the record that Kentucky had just set a few weeks earlier when Kansas was in town. So apparently that was Kansas giving the old gut punch to UK by saying, hey, you can't have more crowd noise than we can. We're going to take your record away from you just like we took away your dignity when we went into your house and won. There you go. So congratulations, Kansas. Probably a number one seed. Definitely the Big 12 champion. But can they win the tournament? I don't think they can. But that's just me. Then again, what do I know?
Still plenty of time for Kansas.
No! And Bucknell has pulled the upset.
NBA, where on-court activities mean nothing compared to the off-court activities. However, there was something last night that caught my eye. Just a normal Monday night game of the NBA, right? Denver and Golden State. Denver comes into the game 25-30. Golden State, just coming off eviscerating the Russell Westbrook demons from Kevin Durant. So what happens? Steph Curry goes 4 of 18 from the field, including 1 of 11 from three-point land, and Denver hits 24 three-pointers, a new NBA record. So, of course, Denver wins the game. Tough to beat another team when they hit 24 three-pointers. I don't care what league you're playing in. Just another Monday night in February in the NBA regular season.
He's heating up. He's on fire.
Ah, but the big news in the NBA yesterday was that James Dolan and Charles Oakley had a secret meeting. Adam Silver was there. Michael Jordan was on the speakerphone, apparently. I'm sure that went over well. And now they're going to try to patch up their differences. And of course, Charles Barkley chimes in on MTNT last night, saying that this is the silliest, most BS thing ever in sports. And that we're all dumb for wanting to hear about it and talk about it. You're right, Charles, but that's how you get your bills paid. That's how you get your gambling debts paid off. Because we love the drama in the NBA. If it was just about the games and the games on the court only, nobody would watch it.
We now return to the NBA on TNT on LSD.
Man, I'm out my mind!
Magic Johnson has requested a meeting with Lakers front office brass Mitch Kupchak and Jim Buss. And apparently Magic wants to start calling the shots for the Lakers. Let me tell you how quickly this meeting's gonna go. It's gonna go about, maybe 10, 15 seconds. Let me show you how this meeting's gonna go for you, Magic. Hey, thanks guys for hiring me. Hey, I wanted to know if I can start being the general manager and calling all the shots for the Lakers. Mitch Kupchak, no. Jim Buss, sorry Magic, can't do it. Okay, thanks a lot guys, end of meeting. That's how it's gonna go. Get used to it, Magic. It's going to end ugly. You were just hired for public relations. You were not hired to make player moves and be an excellent strategist and use strategery, as someone famous once said.
Wow, they miss another one. They're 0 for a lifetime as they continue to fire brick after brick.
Ah, titties.
I'm going to have to use that.
The San Antonio Spurs are 42-13 this season, and they are the second best team in the NBA. However, they only have one All-Star on the team, and that's Kawhi Leonard. But LaMarcus Aldridge, a player worthy of an All-Star appearance, is not very happy with the fact that the Spurs got one All-Star while Golden State got four. And this goes against everything that the Spurs have been preaching for the last 20 years. And I do mean 20 years, because last night they clinched their 20th straight winning season, which is a new NBA record. And who do you think they broke that record from? The old record was 19. You think it was the old Lakers? The old Celtics? No, it was the Utah Jazz from 85 to 2004. That's a tough one to swallow right there. So there you have it, the San Antonio Spurs, 20 straight winning seasons, if you can believe that. And I'll guarantee you half of the fans in the NBA couldn't pick Kawhi Leonard out of a lineup. And he's quite possibly one of the best three players in the league.
Stay tuned for all the excitement of the world champion Cincinnati Reds Reds Radio is produced solely by the broadcast department of the Cincinnati Reds Incorporated.
More fallout from the Brandon Phillips trade. I was reading on ESPN this morning where the baseball experts, using that term very loosely, one of the headlines is, now the Reds have an opening at second base. No, they don't. Jose Peraza is their second baseman. I don't understand why people don't get this. And if you read this article, you can hear that mastermind himself, Brian Price, say, hey, we're going to play Peraza at shortstop and in the outfield during spring training, too, to enhance his versatility. Just put him at second base until you trade Zach Cozart. That's the next item up for bids at the Reds Price is Right show here. Who can we get to take Zach Cozart off of our hands? And how much money would we have to get to give another team to get rid of this guy? Surely it wouldn't be $13 million like you had to give the Braves. And please don't call me Shirley. But another little sentence in this column stuck out in my head. They're going to play Peraza, who's your second baseman right now. They're also going to put him at shortstop and in the outfield during spring training to quote-unquote enhance his versatility. And then right after that, the next sentence is left fielder Adam Duvall will play at third and first base as well. Okay, you want to put Duvall at third? That's fine with me. Eugenio Suarez isn't exactly lighting it up down there. Chris Sabo ain't walking through that door. But why does Duvall need to play first base? Don't you have a guy over there who's making a lot of money? Don't you have a guy over there who is 12th all time in the history of Major League Baseball in terms of on-base percentage? Why do you need to put him in first base? You got a guy named Joey Votto over there. Last time I checked, his numbers are pretty good offensively. Huh. Are the Reds done trading? Maybe. Maybe not. Zach Cozart's one thing. Joey Votto's another.
And the pitch is hit in the air. Foul. Off first. Benzinger backing and calling. And the 1990 World Championship belongs to the Cincinnati Reds.
The Reds made other news yesterday in signing former starting pitcher back from their heydays. And when I say heydays, I meant earlier this decade. Bronson Arroyo. Bronson Arroyo, by the time the season will start, will be 40 years old. In fact, his birthday is next week. In 8 years with the Reds, Bronson Arroyo, 105 wins, 94 losses. ERA, 4.05. In fact, his career ERA is 4.19. His best year, he actually made an all-star team with the Reds when he was 29 years old in 2006. That's 11 years ago. That year, he went 14-11, 3.29 ERA, but led the league with 240 innings. You're not going to get 240 innings this year. In 2013, Arroyo was 36 years old. He went 14-12, 3.79 ERA. Not terrible. Not great, but not terrible. Led the league in home runs allowed. His ERA plus was 100, which means he was right down the middle in terms of being a mediocre pitcher. That's as mediocre as you can get. But after 2013, he went to Arizona. And in 2014, he threw 86 innings and he got injured. He didn't pitch in 2015. He didn't pitch in 2016. Oh, by the way, he made $14 million the last 2 years by not pitching. So Bronson Arroyo, since he left Cincinnati, $23.5 million and 86 innings pitched. That's not a bad little return on your investment. If you're Arroyo, certainly not if you're one of these teams that paid him. In fact, Bronson Arroyo somehow has made $95.5 million in his career. So what does he sign for with the Reds? The minimum salary. So anyway, if you're the Reds, you probably shouldn't get your hopes up that Bronson Arroyo is back, because he hasn't had a season in which he was worth having on your roster since 2012. That's 5 years. Oh, by the way, he's been injured for the last 2.5 years, and he's 40 years old. But everybody's applauding the Reds today for some reason for bringing this guy back. Some of us live in the real world. Dude, it's over. Take your little guitar and your dreadlocks and go home. And in looking up Bronson Arroyo's stats on baseballreference.com, I came across something I did not know. On this site, they will list every player's nickname if they have one. And for Bronson Arroyo, his nickname is Saturn Nuts. I don't make the headlines, ladies and gentlemen. I just report them. Figure that out as you will.
All right, Vaughn. They tell us you're a pitcher. You're sure not much of a dresser. We wear caps and sleeves at this level, son. Understood?
In other news, there's going to be a new documentary on HBO coming out later this year, thanks to Bill Simmons, who no longer has his little weekly talk show, so he's got to find something to do with his time. And since the best thing he ever did at ESPN was those 30 for 30 documentaries, he's going to get right back into it and do one on Andre the Giant, quite possibly the largest man who was in the public eye in the history of the world. Now, you can say Manute Bol and some of these 7'6", 7'7", type basketball players, but they're all, like, really skinny. Andre the Giant was 7 feet tall, and he was a monster. He was huge. Bill Simmons has finally learned, hey, I'm going to stay in my lane for once. I know how to do documentaries. I know how to tell stories. This will be good. Unlike that little talk show he tried to do, in which he sold out, and it was a train wreck. So keep an eye out for Andre the Giant. Although, Hulk Hogan absolutely screwed Andre the Giant twice, both at WrestleMania 3, when he got a 3 count, and on Saturday Night Main Event in 1988, in which he defeated Hulk Hogan 1-2-3, and then gave the belts to the million-dollar man Ted DiBiase. I don't care if there was an evil twin referee that night. Andre the Giant was WWF champion.
I'd like to solve the puzzle, Alex.
This isn't Wheel of Fortune.
Who is Andre the Giant?
Is that an answer to a question?
No, I was just wondering who is Andre the Giant.
Everybody remembers, unfortunately, Jerry Sandusky, the former Penn State assistant coach who is now in jail, hopefully for the rest of his life, as part of a child sex abuse scandal and cover-up. But it came out yesterday that Jerry Sandusky's son, Jeff, was charged with sex offenses against minors as well. And they showed his son, and they said he was 41 years old, and he was walking out to a car, and he looked rough. And I'm like, wow, apple doesn't fall far from the tree, until I read that he was an adopted son of Jerry Sandusky. So it makes you wonder and think, I wonder what Jerry Sandusky did to this kid. Because it wasn't his own flesh and blood. He adopted him. Only God knows what was going on in that house. You wish this stuff would just go away and never come back, but for some reason, it always comes back. And if you could sit there and tell me that Joe Paterno didn't know about any of this stuff when it was going on, you're wrong. He knew.
How long have you been married, sir?
21 years.
You realize on your wedding night, if you'd have killed her, you'd be out now?
I read a headline today that said, study shows that legal sports betting would boost NFL TV ratings and TV revenue. You don't say. Why is football the most watched sport there is now? Because we all bet on football games. And if you don't get that, you're as naive as I was when I left Madison County to go to Atlanta in 1990, when I was 19 years old and didn't know squat. Study shows legalized betting would boost TV ratings. You don't say. Why do you think the NCAA basketball tournament is such a big deal? Regular season basketball games can't draw flies. But man, when that tournament starts, everybody watches those teams that nobody knows who they are. Why? Because everybody's got a bracket, and everybody's bet on the tournament. Thank you, Captain Obvious. Legalized sports betting will boost TV ratings. That's a shocker.
I've always believed brains will defeat brawn any day. I give you the genius.
I want winners.
Greed is good.
Cash, cold, that's what I need.
And now with his picks for today's games, the man who's right 52% of the time, Smooth Jimmy Apollo.
Well, I don't know. Denver.
Woohoo! Denver, yeah!
Winning's one of those rare commodities on Earth that money cannot buy until you called me.
All right, it's Mac Daddy Stogie time. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we hit again last night with Villanova not able to cover the spread against DePaul. DePaul was getting 18 points, and Villanova could not cover that spread. Another win for the bottom line against the spread underdogs, 24-11 on the year, 68.6%. That'll run your man out of town, I can promise you that, or make him at least cut your action off. Our upset special picks, 20-9, that's 69%. Those are games where we take unranked teams to defeat ranked teams, or lower ranked teams to defeat higher ranked teams. So we are on a roll right now. You can just call us butter. And we had to look long and hard for a game tonight. Some games we looked at and did not go with. We saw Florida was 10 over Auburn. A little too much for our blood. There isn't much to choose from tonight. There are no top 10 teams in action. There's only 4 ranked teams in action, including Kentucky. But the only game that really caught our eye is in the Big Ten. Ohio State and Michigan State. Neither team is ranked. Ohio State, 15-11 on the year, 5-8 in the Big Ten. Boy, they just stink, right? Michigan State, they're not much better. 15-10 overall, 7-5 in the Big Ten. Ken Pomeroy has Michigan State ranked 54, Ohio State 61. So you've got two teams kind of in the same ballpark. I've got Michigan State. At home, they're pretty good in the Big Ten, 5-1. They've also won three of their last four overall against the number in Vegas. While Ohio State's struggling, they've lost four of their last five against the number. But the last time they played on the road was last week at Michigan, and they won that game. And Michigan's a tournament team right now. These two teams played earlier in the season, January 15th. Ohio State won that game. Jaquan Lyle may or may not play for Ohio State this game, but it really doesn't matter to us. Michigan State is an 8-point favorite at home, and that's simply too many points. Give us Ohio State to cover that 8 number at Michigan State. Two teams that, if you look at their numbers and take the names away from them, they're actually very similar teams. And when you have a situation like that, we'll take the points. Give us Ohio State getting 8 in East Lansing against Michigan State tonight. Your Mac Daddy's Stogie of the night, and you can take that bad boy to the desert and smoke it.
Oh, this is the worst looking hat I ever saw. Well, you buy a hat like this, I'll bet you get a free bowl of soup, huh? Oh, it looks good on you, though.
And that does it for the Tuesday, February 14th, Valentine's Day edition of the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. As always, we thank you so much for listening. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Bottom Line Lex. Email anytime, bottomlinelex@gmail.com. And make sure to like us on Facebook, the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.